As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. After a summer hiatus, I was worried, Colton, that I wouldn't get the intro right the first time, but I did. Of course, Nick Bummer along with Colton Pouncey. It is the week of after July 4th. We are here on the Thursday after July 4th. Hope everyone had a safe holiday. Colton, how are your lungs hanging in here after the summer of dirt near or whatever the hell's going on around.
Well, it's not just that. It's like, this has been a weird summer because, like, when it's warm outside, you have air quality alerts and it's like 260 up, getting up there. And
it's
then
bad.
And then when it's not warm, it's like rainy. And it's like, this has just been a bit of a depressing summer. And I only have like 3 weeks left until training camp. And my summer's effectively over. So I'm trying to enjoy this last bit here. But, you know, we'll have a good time. We'll figure it out.
That is the doom. We are in the doom stage of the beat writing calendar, are we not? You're like for NFL for sure.
This is like the Sunday scaries for like an extended like 3 weeks here, where you know that your summer's over, like training camps around the corner. I'm just trying to enjoy like this last bit of freedom I have. I'll be off next week, so that'll be good. I've told people this.
I do okay with it now because I think I've done it for so many years, and it's just like whatever. And I finally figured it out a little bit better, but it'll hit me in August. At the end of July, I'll be like, I don't want to do it. But for me, like, I thought about this. It's so weird. If I go back to like the age of 13 years old, every summer for me has been like this. We get to July 5th or whatever. I'm like, I have to go do football. Yeah. And then it became like, you have to write about it. And then now it's your life. And then it's just like, I've been doing this for like so long that I've kind of numb to it. But Totally understand that feeling. In any event, we do have some stuff to talk about today. As Colton, a couple weeks ago, you did write an early prediction here, a pre-camp prediction, we'll call it, on the 53, which I think is always good to do because I think it gives people, you know, perspective on, A, where people stood when all the mini camp and OTAs ended, which I think is important. Sometimes guys can make some more moves in that stretch than you think, but also sometimes that can be overblown. But then, you know, it can also show, more importantly, usually, how far some guys maybe have to go to get where they need to go. So, Colton, was this a hard one before we get into it? We ask that every year. Like, the first year we did this, it wasn't hard at all with Campbell and those guys because it was like, well, you would keep, like, three people on, like, a real team. So, like, every year it's gotten progressively harder. So I ask you, as you go through it here early anyway, how hard are some of these cuts?
So, two parts for me. It was a lot easier for me to do it this year than last year because I actually have a team now. Right. So I've been around the guys. So there's that for sure. But in terms of guys that were locks last year that might not be locks this year, that was something that stood out to me. Like, I'm kind of going through the list. I'm just like, I don't know about Craig Reynolds. I don't know if his spot's safe here. Despite what Hard Knocks would lead you to believe last year, he was a lock the entire time. These kind of did that for drama, I felt like. But he's a guy that doesn't quite feel safe to me. A guy like Julian Aquara, like, if you're listing him as an edge, they have like 6-7 edges that could be in front of him. So there's definitely some positions where I'm just like, man, that would be a tough cut. This guy was pretty much a lock last year, and that might not be the case this year. He's got some work to do. So when you're going through this list doing exercise like that, it's kind of good to have the full picture in front of you, kind of get a sense of like, you know, which guys still have some work to do, which guys are in a good place after mini camp and OTAs. And I feel like it was a pretty good exercise overall.
Yeah, it's getting more competitive, I think, in a lot of the areas that it needs to. Like that running back position, I think it's always one, right, where you probably want it to be every year. I think you probably want guys to be like, oh, shit, like, I don't know. And it's not really been like that here, really. Last year, more than they probably, you know, but to your point, I think as we go through this, we'll see that in a lot of positions, it's probably like, you know, this guy maybe last year would have been safe. Now, you know, it's, he's got a ways to go. Okay, let's start with the offense, and we'll just go through it here. Quarterbacks seems easy. Goff and Sudfeld. You know, before we get to Hendon Hooker, who is on, you started him on IR, which I think that's, you know, certainly possible here. Sudfeld, we have talked a little bit about him, but you, I know, were impressed at least by a few stretches of him in camp. He's a guy right there that we, you know, if he can have a nice training camp, hey, suddenly that looks a lot different. What did you see from Sudfeld in actual, you know, mini camp with in the shorts and stuff?
Yeah, you know, even after the draft, after they got Hooker, I had a lot of people asking me, like, well, are the Lions still going to go after Teddy Bridgewater? Because if Hooker's not ready, we need, like, a backup. And I'm like, I mean, they kind of like Sudfeld, guys. There's a reason they brought him back. And I get it. We didn't see a lot of him last year. I mean, you and I didn't even see him practice because he wasn't around until the season got going. And then, So I was kind of curious to see, like, okay, what do they see in him that maybe the rest of us haven't? And then he went out there and he was in total control of the second team offense, was letting it rip, had some nice touchdowns, deep balls, throwing with velocity, hitting Jameson Williams in stride when he was working with the second team. And then you hear the way Mark Brunell talks about him and said he's been perfect as like this backup quarterback. Not only just a guy they feel confident putting in there if Jared Goff were to go down, but a guy that can also, you know, help coach up other guys and like help Goff, you know, study for his upcoming opponent, things like that. Oh, so yeah, they love important. What he brings to the table. And so I don't think they're going to pursue like a Teddy Bridgewater at this point. I think they're rocking Sudfeld until Hendon Hooker's ready to go. And that's a conversation for another day, but they definitely like Sudfeld. And that was probably one of the, I guess, bigger takeaways from OTAs. Cause I just didn't really know how I felt about him. I hadn't seen him with my own eyes and finally got to do that.
Really interesting because it almost feels like they're viewing Sudfeld now as, and you know, at the time a lot was made about this because it was on Hard Knocks. And I think a lot of would have been made about it anyway with Lions fans because people loved David Blau. And like, I mean, David Blau's a good dude. You know, how could you not after you watch him go through all that, you know, and how he plays football. But I think what the Lions were thinking when they were like, whatever, we'll move forward here. Not just because he was, you know, bad, whatever it was. You've got a guy in Sudfeld who I think is like a more traitsy, toolsy version of Blau. It's like he's not going to ever unseat your guy. He doesn't really need that to be his like guiding. Although it'd be nice, I guess. Like Blau still sort of wanted that chance, and I'm sure Sudfeld does too. And you want to prove it to yourself, but it's also like the threat isn't something that the starter is going to be so overwhelmed by that it screws him up. And you know, that was such a thing that I think Goff probably missed when David left. Like, that's that backup quarterback, man, for the starter, that's a big deal. For him to come to the side and be like, what did you see? Am I crazy? Mm-hmm. And the guy to be like, yeah, that was pretty bad. Like, or whatever, right? Like, that is a big freaking deal. And I do think that that is a big deal because I don't think that Boyle was that, you know, certainly not. Blau was more of that than Boyle was. And he was still trying to find himself and everything else. So that's good. That's good to see that they got something from him, or I guess we'll see how it goes with live bullets. But Hooker as well, a little bit about him, Colton. I mean, nothing really in camp. He didn't do anything to speak of, but, you know, everybody could see him after practice spinning it. We know what we know about him. That's the real deal, right? I mean, other than that, he throws a pretty ball. You know, we know that.
Yeah, no, he was getting the mental reps. You know, he was kind of shadowing Goff. They always put him with the first team just because he couldn't. There's no point to put him on the other side of the field with kind of the UDFAs and rookies. You might as well just have him watch Goff while he's out. So you see him dropping back like at the same time Goff is kind of like mirroring him, which I thought was cool. He's always by Mark Brunell or Ben Johnson, kind of soaking up the offense. And then after practice, he would be out there. I think he was throwing to Trinity Benson, who was also kind of banged up. So those two will get in some extra work after practice. Just some light stuff, nothing too crazy, but you kind of saw a little bit of the touch. And, you know, I think his work ethic is the reason why the Lions fell in love with him, his work ethic, his demeanor. And so if you're talking about a backup who can challenge Goff, because last year it was like, are Blau and Boyle here just because they're not going to rock the boat with Goff? Like, yeah. That's what it felt like. Like, mm-hmm. Goff was in a place last year entering training camp where, like, you didn't know what you're going to get from him at that point. Like, you didn't, his first year was kind of rough. So it's like, maybe we get these two guys in here that aren't going to rock the boat. He knows he's a clear starter. But now that Goff kind of proved himself, you know, rebounded from that first year in Detroit and kind of had the Pro Bowl season last year, I think the Lions felt comfortable bringing in another guy to challenge him, like Kenan Hooker. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not a right away thing, but Hooker does have more starting upside down the road than a Nate Sudfeld. So you get him in here, you bring him along slowly, you see what he can do, and, you know, who knows what happens from there. But in the meantime, I think the hope is that Hendon Hooker can at least develop into a quality backup. Like, if that's his floor, that's a good pick in the third round. That's solid value. And so it's early. We'll have to see when training camp comes around, if he's cleared for that, if he can throw more, participate a little bit more than he did in minicamp and OTAs. And if he can, we'll see what he can do. But I also don't think the Lions are going to rush him, which is why I think in this projection I had him starting the year on the NFI list. That's like the, if you came from college and you were injured, that's the list for that. So I wouldn't be surprised. I think he'd miss like the first four games, which, you know, probably not going to need him for those four games anyway.
Nope. You'd want to save the spot anyway for somebody else. So it makes all the sense in the world. And yeah, it's just more of a, because the work ethic is really, and not being afraid. And that's the thing in the NFL. Okay. Like, that's the thing that so many guys have talked about over the years, where it's like, you get out there and you're a rookie and you don't know anything. And it's like, oh my God, this is unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. Like, this is not like college. College, they bring you in early. They take you around. Your first week is like, a lot of places, they make you go to class. It's like, you know, it's welcome week, all this. That's not this. This is a job. It's the first day out there. And it's like, it takes some stones for a young guy, I think. Like, when St. Brown started going after practice as a 21-year-old every single freaking day and was like, I don't care who, if I'm the only one out here. Like, that's, like, that takes something. Because you know the older guys are like, what's this guy doing? Like, what's going on here? What's he trying to do? And that's, you know, Hooker shows up and it's not a problem. And that's part of the reason why I said throughout the entire thing, every time we talked to Dane and every time we did anything, like, I liked the fact that he was older. I think that the backup appeal for him is already there. If he were healthy, that's the unfortunate part. If he were healthy, we would have seen that in evaluation time. He's accurate. He can make reads and he can do the things that need to be done to be a backup quarterback. The starting level is really the question, right? And that's something that we can't really get any read on until he's healthy. But you love to see that he's fearless. I think that's what, in the best way. Like, he's not a bad, unapproachable person, but like, fearless in a social working setting is such a big deal for rookies. And the Lions don't really draft a lot of guys, Colton, that aren't like that. Jameson has had some issues with that. We'll get to him. But Hooker, St. Brown, Malcolm, most of the guys I feel like are more like that. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. I think you're spot on. That's usually their type. Yeah. And even when you talk to Hendon Hooker, like, a few times he's done media availability with us, I've just been so impressed with the way he carries himself.
Absolutely.
You could tell he's mature. I know he's a little bit older, so that's probably has something to do with it. But it just seems like he was like raised the right way, you know, just good head on the shoulders. Yep. So, we'll see what he can do down the road.
I like that pick more and more as it goes. Okay, so running backs, totally different, except for the bottom two, as our old friend Jamar Jefferson is back in the mix, as you've got Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery is your one and two, Reynolds would be the three, and Jamar, which I would agree with you, if he's still here, would be your fourth, as long as he can stay healthy. And this is, you know, where things get a little more interesting, does it not? Like you said, Reynolds, all of a sudden you got Mo Ibrahim in here. Like, what are you looking at from that middle of the pack? Obviously, a lot of eyes are going to be on Gibbs. We know what Montgomery can do. But what are you looking for from that 3-4? Because they'll keep four. What are you looking for in those spots?
This was tough because if I recall correctly, I think they went in, they broke training camp with, I want to say, three running backs on the roster. Or maybe Jefferson was there last year and they cut him like right away.
I think feel that like that's been, what happened. Yeah, yep.
Practice right squad, like right after that.
And it was a controversial keep. Some of the staffers did not.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
That.
So they had four.
Yeah.
It was the top two last year, Reynolds and then Jefferson. And then Jefferson went to the practice squad right away. So they basically, when they started the season, they had three running backs. I don't know if, like I said earlier, I don't know if it's tough because there are three guys battling for basically one or two spots, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. So 81, Reynolds is probably the favorite here just because he's been around. But I do go back to a conversation in Hard Knocks where Campbell was asking his staff, like, would it be the worst thing if we, you know, maybe let go of Reynolds? You know, how do we feel about that? And immediately it was like Deuce Staley, it was Hank Fraley, it was all these coaches stepping up and say, oh no, people would be pissed if that happened. Like, we got to keep him around. And so he listened to his staff and, you know, he made the roster, but he was also banged up and mm-hmm. I don't think he was like particularly effective when he did play. Like, maybe he did enough for like an RB3 role, but
right.
If you have a chance to have like more upside behind your top two, maybe is this the year where you kind of change course and go with another guy if you're only trying to keep three running backs? So is that where Jamar Jefferson comes in the picture? Because Campbell has been hyping him up and that could just be, you know,
yeah.
off-season hype, you know, I don't know. They do this a lot. So that could just be off-season hype. But at the same time, like he said, like, look, we like the way he was practicing last year on the mm-hmm. practice squad. We want to give him a look. It just didn't work out with the numbers because we had Justin Jefferson, who's doing a good job. Or Justin Jackson, I should say. Justin Jackson doing a good job. And we just didn't have room for him. But, you know, when I was out there at minicamp and OTAs, I'm just like, Jamar Jefferson's getting a lot of touches with the first team. What, I wonder yep. what's going on there. And yeah, David Montgomery was out, but they didn't have to go to Jefferson, and they did. And so they're getting some good work there. So I wonder if he pushes for that RB3 role. And then one other guy that we haven't talked about, Mo Ibrahim
mm-hmm.
from Minnesota. You know, I think he rushed for like
north of
50 touchdowns and maybe like 4,500 yards in
college.
He
would carry the ball 1,000 times a game if you let him.
Yeah, like, man. That guy. So it depends what you're looking for too, right? Like, if you want like a short yardage power back guy as your RB3
yeah,
to kind of – you know, I know David Montgomery can do some of that, but maybe you don't want him taking all those hits. So maybe you put out Ibrahim because he can definitely handle that. If you want a guy that's a little bit more versatile in that role that can do a little bit of everything, maybe you go with a guy like Jefferson. If you want a dependable guy that knows the protections, maybe go with Craig Reynolds. You know, so it depends what they want out of that RB3 role. But it should be a good battle. Like, I'm excited to see how it plays out.
It really should be, and I agree with you, and I'll say this. I'll go a step further. If Jamar Jefferson is healthy and if he has a what we would consider a good camp, he's going to be the RB3. They like him. They just do. They like him, I think, more. They drafted him. They liked him when they drafted him. They were bummed when he got hurt in the first camp. They were bummed when he got hurt in the first season, and then it's been like this, and you saw last year, they jumped through a couple of hoops to keep him when they probably didn't need to or maybe shouldn't have, you know, given some of the defensive deficiencies. So my read and guess would be if he has, and maybe they're trying to talk it into existence, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, you know, but if he has a good camp, then that might be your guy because he's a guy that can be a little wiggly. He can catch the ball if you want him to. He can be a special teams guy. He's got speed. He can run power inside too. He can do everything. And so I like the potential there, but again, we've never seen him do anything with pads on for more than like 30 seconds before he gets hurt. It's like iffy on the other side of the ball. The other thing I was going to say there is that Reynolds won that job last year basically because he outworked everybody. And there wasn't anybody else that had enough talent to like overtake what he did with the work.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I don't think he was really challenged when you're out there watching them. Yeah.
Not really. And like, I think he came in every day and we saw in those preseason games and how hard he worked. And we saw the year before how hard he worked. And maybe he does that again, but I think a guy like Mo Ibrahim could have, and again, he has to be healthy because he's had some injury issues too. But if he does what we think he can do, then you keep him because he's more talented. And I think that that's where the cuts come in, and no one is going to disrespect. And that's where I would like to caution people on Twitter and on Threads. Everywhere else and anywhere else that you shout at people on the internet, that if they do, in fact, cut Craig Reynolds or someone else like that, it's probably not because like it's a move that you need to be yelling and screaming and throwing a fit about, because I would assume it's because a guy with more talent is taking his spot. And I think that's the real situation that we're looking at here with the team really at large. I mean, that's the running back is a perfect answer. You know, linebacker too is probably another one, but like there's a lot of guys in here and it's not going to be the same as it was, you know, last year, just because it was that way last year. And I don't think that's going to happen here.
Yeah. I would anticipate a bit of a shakeup here. That would just be my initial read.
I mean, Jamal's gone, right? I mean, nobody thought that was going to happen. And
right. Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, that said, moving on to the receivers, Colton, you keep five, you go with St. Brown, Jameson Williams, who I believe, what does Jameson count?
I didn't count him here. I listed six receivers, but technically six. Only five.
Because five, Williams okay, right. Suspended. You took Cook, yeah. took six, and he does not count. Okay, so, and Jameson will be off on the suspension list, but obviously he's kept. So the five would be St. Brown, Marvin Jones, Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, and Antoine Green, which, you know, I would really like Jameson. I don't know, yep. Your thoughts on the receivers.
Or DeAndre Hopkins, you know.
Yeah, right. Like, I'm not feeling it right now, I got to be telling no. you, other than St. Brown, and I like Marvin, Josh Reynolds, but yeah, I don't know.
So listen, here's my thing with the receiver group, and there are a couple ways I can go with this, but I'll start with this. If Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down during this six game suspension, they are in trouble.
Big at the trouble. Receiver position. On offense.
Big trouble on offense right. in general. When he missed time last year, they were in trouble. Amon-Ra St. Brown was like the most valuable player yeah. on this team, on this offense mm-hmm. last year. So. Especially without, and even they had like DJ Chark at times last year. You know, if Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down this year with this group of receivers, I am very worried. Especially during that Jameson suspension window. Because Marvin Jones, as big of a fan favorite that he is,
right,
he's probably lost a step. He's not the same player he was a couple years ago.
No.
Josh Reynolds has injury issues of his own. He's been in and out of the lineup yeah. a lot. Yep.
Getting older.
Khalif Raymond. Was actually, I think he was the second leading receiver on the team last year.
Like that, you don't.
But
want
he's not
that.
A guy that you want to be in that role. And I like
I do Leaf too. Is
a
but,
great dude, great guy. You want him in your locker room. He's a good punt returner, like all this other stuff. I don't think you want him being your second leading receiver. I'm just gonna say that. And then Antoine Green, who's a rookie, he's got some promise here, but he's a rookie. So that's my thing. Like if Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down, and you hope that he doesn't, and it's probably not fair to just say, oh, well, if this guy goes down, because of course, but same time, like, this receiver position is probably not great depth-wise while Jameson Williams is out, if that also happens. So we'll see. I think they have enough talent to kind of make up for in other areas, and we'll kind of get to that with the next position here, but in terms of the pure wide receiver group and depth, it's fine. Got to have J-Mo here, but...
Yeah, it would really help.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, I think.
How everybody like Cephas now? Everybody want him back on the team? No, I mean, it's... I don't know what I would say. I mean, I don't... It could be worse, to be clear. But the point about the injuries is the greatest one.
It's definitely not as bad as it was like in 2021, no, where they're close, rolling out these other dudes that were...
Like didn't Rashad make the team. Perriman's not
yeah,
here,
this,
right?
We're not in the dark ages there.
But I mean, the odds of getting through one game, let's say, with St. Brown, Reynolds, and Marv, with as much as they use St. Brown, with all three of those guys healthy and not having to miss any time, that's not like, it's not ideal. Those odds yeah. aren't ideal. So to me, it's like, is this a situation where they're still slow playing? Like the Hopkins thing or something else, like I don't know what is going on. Or they, you know, they went in on late a couple of years ago. We remember they added Trinity Benson because it was a, you know, a late cut or somebody that he found on the stack that he thought he liked. And that hasn't really worked. Do they try something like that again? I don't know.
It's tough to say.
But yeah.
yeah.
But I
think they're just, I think they're banking on, they're looking at it as, pass catchers, not just wide receivers. So that's
yeah,
where
that's fair.
Gibbs too. Comes into the mix. That's where we'll get to tight ends here in a sec. But that would be my read on it if they don't make another move. Yeah. And they're thinking that they have enough to kind of overcome Jameson Williams, and they're probably banking on St. Brown making it healthy through those six games. So that would be my guess. And if that happens, I think they'll be fine. But yeah. the difference here versus 2021 is that there are expectations now. So like
exactly. It's a different deal. Yeah.
Like if St. Brown goes down week one against the Chiefs, and then you lose that game, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got that schedule coming up. You can yeah. get off to a rough start there, man. Like, you really can, and that can derail your season. So,
we'll see. There yeah. could be some attractive cuts, too, you know, somewhere else.
There could.
And yeah. I do think that's something that we'll wonder about all camp, frankly. I think you'll be looking at those receivers all camp, and you'll be like, okay, you know who the four are. Are they going to do anything with anybody? Like, who's five? And they're going to bring in... You know, who knows? And it'll just be...
Sammy Watkins, that yeah, dude's like always like, just readily available.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is something that I would consider. Instead of trying to go find a guy like Trinity Benson, who at the time I understood the idea. It was like, let's go find a guy that's young, that just needs a fresh start, you know, a young guy who could be our own, basically like we drafted him. In this case, I don't think I would try to do that again. I would probably try to go get a veteran, like a guy who could just come right in and be like, just go catch balls until Jameson's healthy and then get the hell out of here or whatever. And then if we need you the rest of the way, fine, but hopefully we don't. Yeah. And then the next one, like you said, tight end, which is becoming one of the more important spots on the field, tight end plus Kabinda. So we'll go with the four, Laporta, Brock Wright, James Mitchell, and Kabinda. And hey, Colton, this looks pretty good all of a sudden. This looks like a good little tight end group. And a couple of years ago, it did not. I was always worried about the depth beyond TJ. You love what Brock Wright did last year. I still love the potential of James Mitchell, and everybody loves Kabinda. This is a fun one, and they've got other guys. Zylstra's a tough cut, right?
It's a good room, and I was gonna say, Zylstra's not on here, and that was probably one of the tougher cuts in here because he's been getting a lot of work with the first and second team offense during minicamp, and like, man, I feel like they're gonna find a way for him. They'll put someone
on more strikes, some list, and
I think they'll probably make room for him somehow. Sit some guy for four games to start the year where he's. Mm-hmm. on the roster, and then you kind of go from there. But in terms of what they have here with these four, Laporta is, I think he's going to be a stud, man. Mm-hmm. he was great in minicamp. He was catching everything, whether it was a first team offense, second team offense, third team offense. He was just doing his thing, and I think he's going to be a really good player. Brock Wright is a guy they like, dependable. He took over that starting job for Hockenson last year. He'll probably start the year in the lineup as a starter. I could see them kind of
rotating.
I think Laporta is the best player here right now, but I could see them kind of slow playing him just because that's what teams do sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, Brock Wright's probably your tight end one, where Laporta's still playing a lot, even though he's not technically a starter. Got James Mitchell, another young guy that was kind of injured last year. And I think Steve Heiden, their new tight ends coach, was saying that, once he's a year removed from that ACL, that's when you kind of really see his impact. And for an injury like that with tight ends, he kind of mentioned that. So I'm excited to see what Mitchell can do. I like him a lot last year when a few times I saw him. And then Kabinda, a lot of people still ask me, why is Kabinda on the team? Why do we need a fullback in 2023? And it's on the surface, it's a fair question. But if you know how the Lions operate and what he means to the locker room, he's always going to have a spot here as long as Dan Campbell's in town.
I'm trying to think of a Detroit metaphor from the old days of the guy in the team that was always just there because there's a lot of them, of course, that you're why is he here? He's our guy or whatever. And that's him. He's a Bill Laimbeer-ish type guy around here a little bit. I don't know if that's quite the same because he doesn't play that much, but he'll be in the thread of the Dan Campbell Lions, I think, pretty much the whole way.
He's also their NFLPA rep, so there's that too.
Yeah, a leader and a guy that everybody loves, and he plays his ass off, and he's one of their best special teams guys as well. James Mitchell, Colton, is maybe one of the he might be the top guy on my list of who do I want to see other than Jameson, when they put pads on in camp and when they start hitting, because Heiden's 100% correct. He didn't. I don't think Mitchell did anything really in camp physically last year until maybe the end, if he did anything at all.
Yeah.
And if he can get out there this year right away and we're going to see, live 11-on-11 and he's going to block, or 9-on-7, whatever it is. If he can start doing that and start becoming, an asset with the, he's a starting tight end. That's what he is athletically. He's right up there. He can do a lot of the things, not quite the same level as Laporta, but he can do a lot of the same things. That's suddenly, if he can prove it, this thing looks, Brock Wright's the third guy, and it's right now we're talking about him, he's probably the starter, but if he can prove it, then Wright's gladly moving down, probably not gladly, but he is moving down to that third spot, And that's the situation here, and I think it's really intriguing. So I am fascinated with Mitchell.
Laporta and Mitchell are the future here. I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's hit the offensive line, then we'll go to the break here. I don't know how hard this one was. The five, obviously, we know. Sewell, Vitae, Ragnow, Jackson, Decker. Obviously, Glasgow will be on that list. Matt Nelson, Pierce Bakker, and then Colby Sorsdahl is the other one that you've also kept there. Your thoughts on this one? Was this difficult? Pierce Bakker, I don't know much about Ross Pierce Bakker. What's the story on this guy?
Yeah, so he was sort of the immediate backup center when Frank was missing time.
Okay.
In minicamp and OTAs there. So,
he's Evan though. All right.
That's an important job, knowing that absolutely. Frank's foot is like messed up to a point where it's like, I don't think he can have surgery on it. I think that's what was floating out there. You just got to deal with it. So that could cause some problems. So your backup center, you need a guy that can replace your like Pro Bowl guy. So the fact that they turned to him first, I kind of wonder, like, is that just you're trying to maximize what you have there? Because Graham Glasgow was playing more guard than center there. I know he can play both, but sure. It seems like they like him more at guard.
Yeah.
So who's the backup center? Seems like it's Pierce Bakker. So if that's the case, then throw him on the 53. Because there's so many names here. Like, I mean, I think they have like 18 offensive linemen right now.
Yeah, they have a lot working through, for sure.
And there's obviously some of those are just like camp bodies or whatever. But like Logan Stenberg, I did not have him on here. Jermaine Afidi, who was a 2016 first-round pick, he's on the team now. They probably need some tackle depth. Can he fill that role? I'm not sure, but, you know, they have him around right now. Who else do I have on here? Like, Keyote Iwosika, I didn't have him on the projection, and he was a tough cut because I think they like him, and he was the guy that kind of impressed people in Philly when he was out there, and then came to Lions and started some games last year. So, you know, we'll see. But I have Colby Sorsdale on here because he was a fifth round pick, and I think they kind of see him as like a piece for the future, even though he might not be ready immediately. I don't think you want to run the risk of putting him on the practice squad.
Right.
And then I have Matt Nelson. He's probably a guy that can be pushed by Afidi. So that might be like the toss up for me. But if Pierce Bakker is your Ragnow backup, Sorsdale is your like young guard of the future. You've got your five starters. Glasgow's here. That one other spot, if they're going with nine, is Matt Nelson. So it depends what they want there. He's been like the sort of sixth offensive lineman in those packages, the jumbo packages. That's a role that they go to a lot in the red zone. So maybe they're just comfortable and they want a guy that can continue doing that. But I wouldn't be comfortable with him as like your left or right tackle if Sewell or Decker goes down.
Right.
So that's my question with him, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's about what I would have done. I mean, I remember Pierce Bakker now. He played at Bama. I had to think about it for a second there. And he's a guy kind of like Graham. He's not as big as Graham, but he could do both. He could be a guard as well if you need him to, but primarily probably a center. And I think the situation here, probably the thinking is that you don't know, you know, Vitae, who the hell knows how much we never know what you can get from him. Hopefully he's healthy, you know, who knows. And then I think Glasgow, so that means that him and Glasgow have to be sort of working at guard. And they're probably competing for that starting spot. So I would assume that you know Glasgow can snap if he has to snap. But if a situation occurred where Frank's hurt and then Vitae gets hurt, okay, well, when now what? So, like, you know, that's where it becomes – that's interesting. And I think that, you know, losing Evan Brown, obviously you have to go and start over there with that spot. And I think Pierce Bakker, he's a little older than Evan was, but, you know. And we'll see on Sorsdahl too. Like, that's the other one. We got to see when the pads come on, right? Like, we don't really know anything about him yet. So
right.
We shall see on that. Okay, let's take a quick break here, Colton, and we'll come right back on the other side and do the defense.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, we're back. Going over the Lions 53-man roster projections. Hey, also, before we get to that, Colton, shameless plug. I can't believe I didn't do this at the top. Buy my new book. I wrote a book with Mark Slater on the 1997 Michigan football team. If you're a Michigan fan, you know most of those players. If you're not a Michigan fan, that team had Charles Woodson, Brian Greasy, Steve Hutchinson, Tom Brady, Lloyd Carr was the coach. We have lots of great stuff. Michigan1997book.com. Pre-order now. It'll be out in the fall. So in any of...
Can't wait for that.
Had to get the plug in there, Colton.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
At another time. But okay, on to the defense here as we go. And this is the other one where we talked about on the other side at, you know, at the start. Like, it's going to get harder. And you mentioned Okwara being, you know, right off the top, you know, Julian. And I think we actually talked about him right at the start of, like, OTAs or rookie minicamp even, where it was like, what's going to happen there? So edge-wise, you've got it at Aiden, Charles Harris, Kaminsky, Romeo Okwara, Josh Pascal, and James Houston, which I got to say is a pretty damn good group. That looks pretty good to me.
Really
and
good.
Obviously, Julian's out of that six, but I'm not arguing with anybody in that group right there. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I just struggle to kind of see when I'm looking at that list, those six guys. I'm just like, all these players I'd rather have over Julian.
And why would you need another, you know, why would you need another one? I want all those guys to play.
Yeah. Like Hutchinson, you know what you're getting from him. Mm-hmm. Harris is a veteran that they brought back. Same with Okwara. Like, they could have cut both those dudes, and they didn't. They just kind of, like, they took pay cuts to remain here, so I think they're going to remain here.
Yeah.
Kaminsky does all the dirty work. They love his mentality. They re-sign him. Like, he's not going anywhere. And then Pascal and Houston are young dudes that, you know, Pascal was a second-round pick, so that was a bit of an investment, and you want to see what he can do this year now that he's healthy. And then Houston, you're getting great value from him as a six-round pick who had 8 sacks and 92 pass rush snaps. Like, that's insane. So I think you feel good about that, even if he is, like, maybe one-dimensional. Like, yeah, like, that's a really good group, man. That's versatile. You can do a lot of things with that group right there. And I just kind of struggle to see where Julian Okwara fits in. If they do keep 7 edges, like, you're going to have to cut someone else somewhere at another position. So I think it's a tough – like, this is a deep position already. So I don't think you need 7 dudes. Like, that's a lot. So yeah, I kind of have him being the odd man out here. We'll see. I know they like him, but he's got some work to do.
They'll have to make a decision on him, because if they cut him, he's going to get picked up. Like, yeah, I don't think he's not a guy that they're going to be able to cut and stash. Like,
no,
you know, and those are the hard conversations. Like, we'll get down in here and, you know, like Savion Smith's on the, you've got him as a safety. Like, he was a guy last year that I thought should have made the team. And, didn't make the team because I think they knew no one's going to take him. Like, no one is taking Savion Smith. Like, the only people who know that he had a good camp, Nick, is you and Colton and, like, the other people out here. Like, no one's taking him. So, like, it just is what it is, right? Like, so I think that could play a role with a guy like Julian, but you're 100% right here. He's on the bubble firmly because you are not touching or even thinking about touching any of those six before you get to his name. And frankly, I'm not thinking about giving snaps to him before I think about any of those. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think
there's
that's
only so many to go around.
Yeah, and it's a good spot. They have done a great job of rebuilding that whole thing. And they've done it. Look at how they've done it. I mean, in a weird, unique way. Obviously, you use a high investment with Aiden that you always want to do with an edge on any team. They paid Charles Harris, but they didn't go insane with it. They were smart and lucky with John Kaminsky because they got in. I think they had the waiver claim up when he happened to be cut, and they were just lucky that they were the first of like 20 teams to put a claim in for him. He's a freak athlete. Everybody knows it. Pascal was a pick. They kept Okwara, and they got lucky with Houston probably, but also that's good scouting. Like, it's been unique and different, and it's not overly expensive or something that you're like, oh, they can't ever, you know, someday they'll have to worry about this. But this is a really good young core of edge players. Nobody in here is like an old man that you're like, we can't really do anything with him. Most of these guys can do 2 things. Some of them can do 3. Yeah. Like, that's really good. And this is why this and the secondary is why I have hope for the Lions to have a better defensive showing this year. In any event,
Julian feels like a guy that maybe if they want to keep him around to the end of training camp, they can trade him.
Maybe
for like a future 7th round. Like, if Riley Patterson can get a 2026 7th rounder, I'm pretty sure you can get something for Julian if you want
to
go that route. But
yeah, he's going to be playing like 80 snaps in the first preseason game. Whatever, he's going to have to. In any event, okay, to the linebackers, which is also
defensive tackle.
Oh, defensive tackle. I skipped DT, did I? Okay, where did I went right over it. Okay, yes. Okay, defensive tackle.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, Aleem. So we got 4 plus Levi on the IR.
On the who knows list.
On the whatever list. So we got 4. We got Aleem McNeil, Bugs, Christian Covington, and Broderick Martin. Christian Covington, talk to me a little bit about him, because he would be a name that a lot of people, I think, around here would... the rest of them are familiar. We'll get into Broderick Martin in a second, but talk to me about Covington.
Yeah, the Lions signed him in May. I believe he was with the Chargers before that. He had a really good 2021 season at defensive tackle. 2022 was not as good, but was free agent. Lions picked him up. I thought it was just going to be as depth, but then you go out there in minicamp, and he is with the first team defense, which was kind of surprising to me. But he does have some starting experience, and I know in minicamp at least, in OTAs at least, Isaiah Bugs was not really out there. Okay. So Covington was with the starting unit while Bugs was out. So I'm just like, oh, well, that's why, just because Bugs isn't here. And then minicamp came around and Covington was still out there with the first team while Bugs was more with the second team, the reserve. Right. So I'm like, that's interesting. And I do remember Brad Holmes saying that he felt like Bugs played too many snaps last year. As great as he was in the locker room, he said he felt like he played too much, which tells you they probably need some help there.
I agree.
So that's why you bring in a guy like Covington probably, and then Broderick Martin, who we'll get to in a sec. But yeah, in minicamp, in those early practices in the offseason, it was McNeil and Covington next to each other. McNeil playing more three tech, Covington playing some nose. So that would probably, we'll see if that sticks in training camp. Like, there's going to be some competition there, but early returns are that might be your starting pair, which is kind of interesting that a guy like Covington in short order just kind of worked his way into the first team defense. Like, they kind of trust him, I guess.
This is really interesting because Covington and Broderick Martin are like opposites in so many ways. Like, Covington is a short, he's like built like Kancey, right? He's like 6'2", 290, something like this. But when you go back and you look at his profile when he came out, like, he is super agile. He can move and run up and down the line. Really explosive in the lower half. He can jump. I think he jumped really high at the combine or whatever else he tested at. Like, he's a really good athlete who's like short, squat, who can get under you and just be like a power rusher, like, that just bowls people over and just gets you pass rush, like, on third down from inside.
Yep.
And whereas Broderick Martin has like the 35 and a half inch, whatever they are, like, you know, the he's crazy length, and he's a massive guy who could play a couple different spots. And then the whole thing, I think, ties together with Laleem. And this is why I think, you know, you like Covington, because he can do something that's unique. He's giving centers and guards things that they don't normally see with his agility and speed. And Laleem is so versatile and so good.
Yeah, he can play next to anyone. It's so funny.
Yeah, and that's really the difference now when we're talking about this team. They have some guys. And St. Brown's like this on offense. Like, you can put a worse player next to him than you normally would be able to, and that guy's going to be okay because St. Brown's out there helping the guy and he's affecting the person next to him. Like, that's a Laleem all the way here. Like, they're worried about Levi for sure, but it's also not like a disaster, I don't think, at this point. I think they've done a decent job, a nice job of addressing the future here. If Levi comes back, all the better. If not, Covington is probably the replacement for him in terms of what you're asking him to do. And you like Bugs, and we'll see about Martin. And maybe they add somewhere else here, too. They've done it every year, almost, in camp.
This is a position where I feel like they're going to try to wait for someone to get cut and maybe make
They added Bugs last year in camp, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that were the move. And maybe you get, like, a higher quality version of Bugs this year.
Yeah, let him rest, yeah.
Yeah. But I know they like Broderick Martin a lot, and I think for what they would ask him to do this year, I know he still has some developing to do, but I think for what his role would be as just a rotational nose, I think he can get some snaps.
I think so too.
I think he can kind of learn on the job and not mess things up entirely to where you can't play him. So they probably like what they can do. And also, when you look at defensive tackle and like interior pass rush, we mentioned the versatility with those edge guys. You can put a Kaminsky in there. You can put Josh Pascal in there on third down just to kind of rush the passer and add a little bit more. Aiden can do that.
Absolutely. I
probably don't want him doing that, but he can if they ask him to. So I do think they have a lot of versatility, and they probably think they have enough here. I still think they should probably try to look at the market when guys get cut, but going into the season with this group, it's not as bad as last year. I'll say that.
Yeah. No, it's improving. It's getting better for sure, and Aline helps a lot with that. Linebackers, we got five kept here. Anzalone, Jack Campbell, Malcolm Rodriguez, Derek Barnes, and Jalen Reeves-Maven, who is back. And another one, just like, he's like the Kabinda of the defense, more or less. He will do every special teams job that's asked, and he will end up playing more snaps with the starting defense than anyone thought possible when the season began. I can almost guarantee it, unless he gets hurt or something. But this is an interesting one, Colton. We've talked a little bit about Malcolm, and Jack Campbell's here to take his job. And I would be surprised, I guess, if Glenn doesn't have Aaron Glenn or Anzalone out there starting away.
He's going to start. Yeah.
But that means that Campbell and Malcolm are in a fight, and Derek Barnes.
Don't leave him out.
Yeah, in a real fight. So this is a really interesting group.
Very interesting. Because I think if you're a fan watching at home, you see Hard Knocks hyping up Malcolm last year. You know, he played well for a rookie six rounder, like kind of exceeded every all year expectations. And you're kind of wondering, okay, what's the next step? Can he improve his game? What, like, where can he go? Like, what's his ceiling? But to me, it's almost like, I wonder if they thought he played too much. Like, they didn't say that with him like they did with Bugs, but you know, every time, like, we thought they just like were hyping him up all nonstop. But really, when you would ask the coaches about Malcolm, they'd be like, all right, let's pump the brakes here. He's a rookie six rounder, you know, like, it was more like their room wasn't good. Like, they didn't have enough there. Yeah. So, like, like, watch the Hard Knocks clip with Calvin Shepard. He's like, I really don't want to play this rookie six rounder, but you guys are going to make me if you don't, like, step your shit up, you know? Yeah, like, that's kind of the read of that room last year. And now they've got a little bit more in there. Like, Jack Campbell is here. And if Jack Campbell's ready to go, you put him at Mike and you move Anzalone to Will, and those are your two starters. If not, you could have Derek Barnes kind of challenge Malcolm for that starting role as a weak side backer. And that was kind of a, you know, when they first went out there for OTAs, even before Malcolm got hurt, it was Anzalone and it was Barnes, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then Calvin Shepard was really, and Shep does not go out of his way to just like overhype dudes, but he said that Derek Barnes looks like a completely different player. You know, he's calling out what the offense is doing, which is something that he wasn't doing years ago. So they've seen this like tangible growth from Derek Barnes, and he's a guy that has always been athletic, has always been able to move. That's never been an issue for him.
Great athlete.
It was just like the mental side. And, you know, does he have the IQ to play this linebacker position? And in the past, they were kind of taking their time with him, letting him grow into the role. And, you know, the returns weren't great, but from what they've said this offseason, it seems like he's finally coming along there. So if that's the case, he can absolutely challenge Malcolm Rodriguez for a starting job. So really the only starter like locked into a role is Alex Anzalone, and the rest will be decided in training camp.
Right. And the real battle here is for the future of the job, you know, is for who's the starting two once Anzalone's contract's over or they get out of it and he's gone. Because I think ideally you're looking at Campbell and Rodriguez / Barnes, which one, you know, and then the other one is either the odd man out or the rotational guy that becomes your special teams ace, kind of like the younger version of Jalen, really. I think that's really what the battle is this camp. And I think Campbell's going to be a starter. He's going to start at linebacker probably this year. That's not going to surprise me if he's a starter at the end of training camp, right? Then you've got him at number two right there behind Anzalone. Not going to surprise me at all. But like you said, Colton, I think preferably Calvin Shepard would like to be able to give those three, Campbell, Rodriguez, and Derek Barnes, like, some time to breathe, like as they go, like you give them a heavy share of reps, but also like take them out for maybe two more series than you would normally take out a guy, so he can stop and watch and like absorb what the hell's going on. Like, I feel like that's the ideal situation. It just they've never been healthy ever to be able to try this. And you know, I like where they're at now, and you know, it's good to see Reeves-Maven back, but it's do or die time for Derek, I would think here. And Malcolm, it's probably closer to it than people probably think, right? I mean, that's probably fair to say.
Yeah, it's not like Malcolm was the first.
NFL, but yeah.
Right. It's not like Malcolm was a first round pick. I think that's what we have to remember. No, like, exactly. They don't have that same attachment to him, even though 100%. He played pretty solid football last year. And
it's just the reality of the game.
I do know Shep loves this room. He did kind of go out of his way to say, if Jack isn't ready, Jack isn't ready. We won't just put him out there because he was a first round
pick. Yeah, they don't have to.
When he says that, I believe him because Shep has always kept it real with us. So he did say that, and he said, I got some hungry guys in my room that want to play. So Yeah. I think the top two guys, Anzalone's locked in, whoever's the second guy in training camp, when that battle settled, will be the starter week one.
So. Yeah.
And also, I should mention, Anthony Pittman was a tough cut here.
Yes.
He's another guy that's sort of the special teams ace. So yeah. To me, that last spot comes down to Reese Maven and Pittman.
Yeah.
So considering they brought back Reese Maven, I think he's got that job, though.
I think they would do all they could to keep Pittman on a practice squad or somewhere, afterward, too, if they had to cut him. Yep. Corners, obviously looking a lot different as we knew. Seven on the list here, including a couple guys that could go either way, which is good because the Lions haven't had enough of that. But anyway, Cam Sutton, Jerry Jacobs, Emmanuel Mosley would be your three, what we would call
outside corners.
Outside guys. Then we got C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Will Harris, Brian Branch, and Starling Thomas, who I like as well. This is so much better than last year. I don't even know how else to say it. The first couple were terrible, and then last year really wasn't much. And then it's like, yeah, you've got three guys in here plus Jerry who have done it, and you've seen them do it. So it's like, okay, you have veteran football players who know what they're doing. Automatically, this is going to be a better secondary when all is said and done, I think. And, your thoughts on this. This is a good group of players here, especially for a guy like Brian Branch to be involved with, to be able to watch.
Yeah. Here's a good way to look at it. They swapped out Imani Oruwariye for Cam Sutton. They swapped out Jeff Okuda for Emmanuel Mosley. And mm-hmm. they swapped out Mike Hughes for C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Oh, man.
Like that. And I guess Will Harris is in the mix here. But now Will Harris is in a reserve role, which is better for him.
Yeah.
That's a great room. I'm looking at this room. Even Brian Branch, we haven't talked. Starling Thomas, I love what he's mm-hmm. brought to the table as a UDFA. I think he's going to make the team.
He's so fast.
He's so fast, yeah. I think he runs a 4.37, mm-hmm. something like that, 4.38. So I look at this room, and Jerry Jacobs wasn't around to start the year last year. And
that's right.
He is now your CB3, which is probably a good spot for him. He's a guy that can play and start if you need him to. He's still going to get reps regardless.
Oh, yeah, he'll play.
Yeah, your top three, I think, is set if Mosley's ready to go. We'll see where he's at come training camp. But, I mean, I really like this group. And I actually wrote the other day a story about how these new pieces fit in to Aaron Glenn's secondary and what he likes to do in terms of playing heavy man coverage. The Lions led the league in, cover one rate last year. So there's so much that they can do with these pieces. And it finally feels like Aaron Glenn has his guys. And I remember talking – I think it was around the Lions bye week last year with you, and we were talking about why the defense is bad. And a lot of people were like, fire Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
And I said,
don't do that.
This offseason, they need to get him some talent to work with because he simply hasn't had it. He hasn't had the pieces to run the defense that he wants to run. And you can say, well, good DC should be able to mm-hmm. mold to the players he has. These players that he had were very bad. These weren't good football players last year. I'm sorry to say that.
No.
But they weren't. And so, now that he has a Cam Sutton that you pay $33 million for, and he seems like he can be a good locker room presence and also a solid corner on the outside, you have a Mosley who is quietly having a really good season with the 49ers. You add him into the mix. C.J. Gardner-Johnson has a chance to kind of completely revamp the identity and the philosophy of the secondary and how they think about the game, how they approach the game. That, to me, those are three pieces that can help you immediately. And then you go out and you add a Brian Branch, who is probably your C.J. Gardner-Johnson of the future if he doesn't resign. And he's a smart, instinctive player that Aaron Glenn said will be on the field this year as a rookie. They'll find a role for him. So they have all these pieces now. I just think they're loaded up to finally play the style of defense that Aaron Glenn wants to play. So to me, they're ready to go, man. It should be interesting.
Absolutely. It should be. This is going to be very different, and I think people are going to enjoy the attitude and everything that these guys bring because the safeties are bringing it to four yes. here. So Kirby Joseph, Tracy Walker, obviously the first two. Ify Melifonwu, and then Savion Smith, who is back, which is cool to see. Mm. This is interesting because, again, it's going to be different. You're going to have situations where, because Gardner-Johnson is so unique, he'll be out there with Joseph and maybe three of those corners, and Tracy won't be on the field. And then you'll have situations where you'll have Joseph and Walker as your split safeties, and then CJ will be in the box or so. I don't know, in the slot, whatever it is. So I think that it'll be, when it comes down to it, I think you can kind of look at C.J. Gardner-Johnson as a safety slash corner. And Branch a lot too. Of yeah, yeah, Branch too. And a lot of like three safety looks, essentially, is what I think we'll end up seeing here. But some of that too is going to depend on how quick Walker gets back and how good he looks or doesn't, I suppose, in camp as well. But man, like a lot of options again. And, you know, last chance probably for Iffy, probably as well, you know, I would imagine. But like another one of these guys that haven't seen much of.
So there are three guys that they've been hyping up, though. And one of them is Jamar Jefferson. One of them is Derek Barnes. And one of them is Iffy.
Well,
and
I can't imagine why.
Like their 2021 draft class.
Yeah, has exactly. Not come the three yet. That didn't do anything.
But I will say, that being said, right. Iffy, I don't know if it's the, and I talked about this with somebody.
I like Iffy, yeah.
We joked about this in minicamp that Iffy is now wearing number 6. Ooh. I don't know if it was just the number change, but the single digit looks good on him. He looks, I was like.
He's long, yeah.
He's long, like you see it. I don't know why, maybe it's a number change, but he was looking good out there. They had him getting some first team reps because there were moments where obviously Tracy couldn't participate in everything. There were times where they wanted Gardner Johnson at nickel instead of safety. He's kind of playing both while Tracy was out. But when C.J. Gardner Johnson was playing nickel, Iffy was your safety next to Kirby. And I remember last year when he got those two starts to end the year, you know, the first start was a little rough. The second game, I thought he played a lot better.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, was climbing the ladder a little bit there. And then watching him for a little bit out there, he looks a lot more comfortable. Like last year, he was just learning a new position. He moved from corner safety. And they made that transition a year into his career. And so it's like he kind of lost some development time last year. But I think this year is probably the year where you would expect to see a leap if there is going to be one. Like it is sort of a make or break year for him, I think. But it seems like he's showing some stuff. They like what he's doing. And then Savion Smith, like I liked him last year. You and I both liked him last year. We were probably like, the only people that had him in our
I was bummed that he was cut. He should not have been cut.
I don't think so.
I'll still stand on that hill.
I don't think so. I was happy to see him get his chance. I was like, okay, so they're starting him against the Patriots. Like he went from practice squad to now you're, oh, it's go time. Like you're playing for us. And it was really unfortunate to see him go down with, I think, that neck injury. But, you know, he had a good attitude about it. I remember talking to him in November. He said, I'll be back. And here he is. And
here he is.
I think he's like with the second team at safety. So, yeah, there's four guys listed here. But when you include Branson, Gardner Johnson, you can kind of, you know, make it six if you need it. Like, I think if Kirby or Tracy were to go down, they'd immediately plug Gardner Johnson in at safety. And then they probably put like Will Harris or Brian Branch at nickel. That would be my guess. But they do need some depth here. And I think they are starting to build some.
Iffy is still really interesting. And I think that the reason why you're hearing the Iffy, Barnes, and Jefferson, and not just because obviously, you know, those three haven't worked out, but I'm assuming because all three have been challenged like directly this offseason before OTAs and probably around the draft. Like they probably told, or maybe even in the winter, you know, told all the guys, like, you, it has to be right now. Like, we do not want to lose you because you're really talented and you have a lot of, all three of those guys are special athletes that have a lot of traits. And, but it has to happen because they're at a point now, because if he is in the same conversation as Jefferson, there, if it were up to a lot of people last year, he would not have been on the team. Like he would have been cut. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's how that would have gone, but they drafted him, they invested him, and you got to ride it out. The injuries have been frustrating. It's not something you can always control. Like you said, when he's out there and you give him a minute, like he sometimes he looks okay. It looks good. Like it looks like it's coming along, but it never lasts. Like it's just like we need to see it for more than 30 seconds, man. So all three of those guys, those are three guys that'll be heavy watches for the staff throughout camp. Like it's got to go right away because you want to keep a guy like Iffy because he can also, like we talk about Brian Branch, like what if C.J. Gardner-Johnson turns this into a whopper and leaves? Great. Good for him. And Brian Branch is ready to step in. Great. Well, you maybe you also have another one in Iffy who can be the same thing, who can be a corner, safety, nickel, whatever you want him to be. So those three guys are like really possible swing players who could help turn you from a team that's pretty good into something more. But like it has to happen right now, like immediately. And for some of them, if it's like if it's a crap fest for the first 2 weeks of camp, they might be cut. Like, because it just might be like, get him out of here. I can't look at it for one more minute, you know, but like, these are long-term projects and like the rent is due, I would say probably.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, I mean, that's probably what I would say on that. In any event, down to the specialists here.
Oh boy.
And this is never anymore, never an easy task. Jack Fox, of course, the easiest one.
Oh, we like
one.
Jack Fox, yeah. That's an easy one.
So you go Michael Badgley and old Jake McQuaid, who's in there with Daly as the snapper. So what are you taking Badgley over Patterson? But, of course, who the hell knows?
So they have three kickers. They have three kickers right now.
And you
they
also have right, Parker Romo, right.
Parker Romo, formerly known as John Parker Romo. Don't know why he dropped the John, but... Here's that.
The artist formerly known as.
Yes. Yeah, man, like, that was an adventure watching. It was really just Romo and Patterson kicking. Badgley, I don't know if he was hurt, but they just, like, weren't throwing him out there for those, like, end-of-practice kicking mm-hmm. situations. And so we're out there, we're charting the kicks, and they're going, like, 6 of 11 from, like, 40 to, like, 55, and you're just like... This is practice, man. There's no crowd here. There's no environment. There's no really not much of a defense. They're not going like super hard trying to block this. Like, and they're going 6 of 11, 7 of 11, you know, whatever. And it's just like, I've seen this movie before and it does not end well.
No.
So that's why I have Badgley as just, I'm locking him in as a starter until we see like the three guys going at it. Because again, Badgley wasn't doing much there. But Patterson, like, that was surprising to see him just like, kind of missed some easy kicks there because he was very good with the Jaguars last year. They traded for him, which is funny because they cut him last year, obviously, but they traded for him again just to get him in here. And obviously he had a good season. So I'm like, all right. So the fact they traded for him means that they invested something in him. So maybe he is here to kind of be the starter and push Badgley, but then he just didn't look great, you know? And then Parker Romo has a strong leg. He was probably hitting the most accurate from distance, but it was not always pretty. It was like, you kick it like, it's been like sideways instead of like up and down. Like, it's just like, you don't know like where this ball is going after he would kick it. And sometimes it would go through from like 60.
Sometimes
you're like, damn. And you're like, damn, that was cool. And sometimes he'd be like wide right from like 35. And it's just like, this is not going to work out either. So... That's where I'm at with the kicking situation. I would say Badgley, the incumbent, he's probably got the job for now, but obviously they're going to battle it out in preseason. And then Jake McQuaid, former Pro Bowl long snapper.
That's
and
right.
My philosophy is if you're bringing in outside competition at long snapper,
you don't like the guy.
Yeah. You don't like your guy.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where I'm at. And Scott Daly, it was kind of a roller coaster with him last year. So I think that they're bringing in competition for a reason, and considering McQuaid has a Pro Bowl on his resume, and again, they brought him in as a free agent, like, I would imagine he gets a job, but like any situation, there's going to be a battle there to be decided in training camp.
Also, never forget that Dan Campbell cut all of his kickers during his first 50.
Did he really?
Yes. So, yes, all of them. If you go back to the Lions' first 53, they cut them all. Lions.
There's no kicker on the roster.
I believe that is correct. They cut them all, and they signed. I'm going to have to Google it now before I whatever. But Campbell went on like Rich Eisen or somewhere after, and they were like, you know, Dan, you cut all your. He's like, well, we're going to go for two, Rich. Like, like, and I think he was like, we didn't like any of them. Like, they all were bad, and whatever. Like, he'll cut. Because who was the guy? They signed a guy. It was the same kind of thing you're saying. Like, invest. And Chris and I were like, well, they signed whoever it was. They're surely going to keep him. And they cut him early. They cut him early.
That's
and it was like, okay. So, I mean, he's like with these kickers, and that's part of the – yeah, Dan Campbell refuses to have any kickers on his roster. Dan Campbell downplays the decision to not include a kicker on the 53-man roster. Like that. And he was just like, we didn't think any of them were worthy of a spot, so we cut them all. And I think they kept another guy. Stashed him and then signed a dude off waivers, and it was like if the kicking sucks through camp again, that'll be how it is. They'll cut them all, and that's it'll incredible. Be another hilarious headline. Everyone's like, because imagine back then though, Colton. Okay, 2021, when he hadn't even coached a game yet.
Yeah,
and it was just he was still
they knew him from the kneecap biting press conference.
Yeah, that's all he was, and they cut all of them.
Yeah,
and the team looked so bad out there. And it was just like, what the hell is going on? So, hey, it's, don't be shocked.
Look, look how far we've come, though. Look how far we've come, though.
Well, with the kickers, we're
not,
the
not with
spot.
This job, but in general, yeah.
But everywhere else, yes, no, trust his method. There's at least some plan behind it. But no, I would not be shocked if none of them do what they're supposed to do. We'll cut them all and just, I'm not cutting, you know, Jamar Jefferson or Craig Reynolds to keep one of these guys who sucked all camp. Like, that's
fair.
He was very clear about that, that first camp. It was just like, as a former player, I think he said that maybe somewhere along the way. Like, but it's also like not the dumbest thing, right? With your roster. I mean, if those cuts are hard, like,
yeah,
there's always a guy that you cut that you're like sweating it out to see if he clears waivers, and you don't want to even do it. Sometimes it's like, is that worth the risk? And
yeah,
whatever. It's not ever that way with a kicker usually. So,
I mean, okay. He cut both his quarterbacks last year until he got Sudfeld.
Exactly.
So,
same thing. Go. And there you go. I mean, you're right. It was the same version of that. So creative cuts are likely to happen, but it should be an interesting camp, you know, from a depth perspective. Like in the last couple of years, we were so like, and it will be this way too with Gibbs and Campbell, but it was so like, Sewell has to be good right away or this is never going to work.
St. Aiden, Brown has to continue what he did last year.
Yeah. Aiden has to be good right away or this is never going to work. Like, those were very critical, you know, like, and all of these guys are critical, but it just feels like there's more people, you know, on the boat now and less pressure on every rookie to be like, it needs, we have to see it right away. First week of pads or we're freaking out. Like, you know what I mean? That was the feeling those first couple of years. And now it doesn't quite feel as much of that. And I think that's what you want.
For sure. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. We got anything else this week? That's good. You're off next week, right?
I'm off next week. This week I did a thought on every offensive player, and I have a defense version of that coming out, I believe, Friday. So watch out for that. And then I'm off next week. And in a couple of weeks, training camp will be here, and we'll be right back at it.
Very good. Okay. Well, I asked for some questions, but I think maybe I'll put those somewhere else, or maybe we'll get them later. But in any event, we'll be back after Colton gets back, probably somewhere in there. One of us will be on the show at that point. And then once camp starts, I imagine we'll be back every week. Through the
rest regular
of the
rotation.
So, just bear with us through July here. This is when we try to regain our sanity as best we can. As Colton said, the Sunday scaries are setting in for the beat writers across the NFL. This is where you miss the college, right? Because in college, you have another, I would always argue, you have another like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
For me, it was always that stupid media days in Chicago. I hated it. I was always like, get me out of here. I can't be in here. I'm going to throw up in the trash can. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, it was always like, I got to put socks on, you know? But you're okay. You're going to be all right. Remember, training camp, August and September, like August is like a long run up to the season. You got a lot of time, so we'll be okay. But in any event.
Pace ourselves.
Enjoy these next couple weeks, everybody. Hope the air quality holds up for everybody here in Southeast Michigan.
Follow us on Thread.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
We'll be there on Thread.
At Colton_Pouncey.
And I am, I believe, at Nick Baumgartner FB on Thread. So thread us if you want as well. And we'll be there to talk too. But in any event, for Colton, I'm Nick. Thank you for listening. And we will talk later.